baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So pleased to be joined by tonight's guest, host of The Drive Time on Sportsnet, The Fan 590, Ben Ennis. Welcome to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, yeah. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, buddy, we were really excited when we booked you last week to hopefully have a real positive, exciting talk with you about what we could expect for the rest of this playoffs with the Blue Jays. That is not the convo we're going to have, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're telling me. I was down at the ballpark Friday before game one. We did the two-hour pregame before the 4 o'clock first pitch, so a little bit of an early show, and then I had my own family Thanksgiving dinner on Thursday in preparation for perhaps another pregame show down at the ballpark on Sunday. It was all set up until it wasn't. It was a day of reflection, solemn reflection after a historic loss, not just in the history of the franchise, but in the sport of professional baseball.
Like 48 hours has gone by since that collapse. It doesn't feel like enough time. Like to kind of like take a sound, level-headed look at this team and what needs to happen. I'm not ready. Like, where are you at when you look at this team?
Well, I mean, there's the micro of that 9-inning baseball game and an 8-1 lead and all the decisions and all the things that had to go into losing that 8-1 lead, and whether that's managerial decisions, whether that's fielding decisions, whether that's shift decisions as to where the outfielders were placed in the eighth inning. There's that. And then there's the macro decisions that lead you to those micro moments. That's was enough done at the trade deadline when it comes to the bullpen, diversifying this lineup righty lefty. It's a lot. It's a lot. To take stock of in one 9-inning baseball game. But that's what happens when you're talking about a collapse of that epic proportion.
Yeah, because it's really tough to even pinpoint one thing. I mean, I feel like there's so much blame to go around, right? Like, to just put it all on John Schneider or put it all on Bo Bichette or Tim Mays or Anthony Bass just seems kind of reductionist. When you look, let's talk for a second here, Ben, because I am really curious your thoughts on John Schneider removing Kevin Gausman from the game. Because I hated it. But that said, okay, if you just take all the names and all of this out of it, and you just tell me as a baseball fan with no emotional connection to what's going on, listen, Scott, you're the manager, game two, bases loaded, two outs, your second starting pitcher's on the mound. You're up 8-1. Lefty at the plate. Well, I mean, Santana's a switch hitter, so it kind of took that away. But nonetheless, right? Your best lefty's in the pen warming. What do you do? Like, I almost go to the bullpen every single time. Like, where are you at on that decision?
I didn't like it, but it shouldn't be the reason or the catalyst towards blowing a 7-run lead, right? Like we can have two conversations at once. We can say, hey, Kevin Gausman, despite the fact that there was a lot of traffic and a bases loaded situation and Santana had just previously almost hit a home run off of him and was obviously seeing Gausman pretty well, that, yeah, okay, Tim Mesa even given up the eventual four runs, right? He has the wild pitch and then gives up the 3-run home run. I mean, still, you should be in good shape. But yeah, you obviously weren't. I didn't like it. It did kind of feel like a regular season type of decision where, you know, your starter's at 95 pitches. And I know generally the opposite is true, where it's, hey, in the postseason, you have a quicker hook on your starter. But this team's strength is in its first two starters. Mm-hmm. It's in its closer. And I know Tim Mays has been great, but man, look at the numbers against righties all season long. And as you mentioned, Santana's a switch hitter, but obviously going to be hitting right-handed against him. Also, his more dominant side, not power-wise. He only had 3 home runs from the right side this season, but the OPS mm-hmm. not even close. And it's a career-long thing, as well as a one-season thing for him, if you want to take the micro of this season with the Mariners this season. Yeah, it's not a great decision, but you could have easily seen Tim Mesa get the one out that was required from him in that situation. You could have also potentially had Jordan Romano get the one out that was required of him in the 8th inning, and he got 2 outs via the strikeout and then got the pop-up that, I mean, he probably wanted. Only issue was that it was perfectly placed. Yeah, it's like there's – if you're looking for a silver bullet answer – to what went wrong or who to point fingers at, like, I'm not going to give it to you. I can give you a bunch of people.
Yeah.
There's a 26-man roster. Let's probably you say Kikuchi's not responsible, but I wouldn't rule it out. I don't. Yeah. It was a horrible, horrible 9 innings of baseball, and nobody should be immune from criticism, really.
Do you read anything into the Jays' top high-leverage relievers not getting it done in the most important game of the year? Because, like, let's face it, after the trade deadline, they were one of the better bullpens in baseball. They were doing it in an untraditional way, but they were getting it done. But when the chips were down, they didn't. Do you... And this bullpen's under contract for next year, too. Like, there's going to be very little movement there. Unless they decide to. Do you think they decide to go a little bit higher velo, different direction?
Yeah, I mean, that's what works in the postseason. I mean, we saw this with Munoz. We saw this with, you know, all the best relievers in the postseason is that...
Well, we saw it last year, too, when they didn't go that way.
Yeah, well, but this bullpen is better than last year's. And, I mean, this is the point I made today that if, you know, there's another incremental... improvement on the bullpen from this year, maybe you are talking about an elite bullpen in 2023. I think that's, if you were going to talk about one philosophical difference that this team should have, not that it's a different one than last offseason, because as you mentioned, the bullpen was the huge issue with the team mid-season last year, and it was a miracle that they ended up with 91 wins and a game shy of the playoffs, considering how horrible the bullpen was for basically half the year. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's the focus again. And I time and time again, this front office, and it's really the major criticism you could lob at them is that they haven't, they've done lots that has been on par with like the way baseball is going. They've done more shifting than anybody, but as far as the import on bullpens, they haven't gone that way, right? And mm-hmm. they haven't had prospects that have maybe been, you know, starting pitching prospects that have transitioned into higher velocity, shorter inning relievers. That hasn't happened. They have not produced internally enough swing and miss arms. And yeah, Jimmy Garcia was a nice signing. They just haven't had enough good fortune building that bullpen, and it has to be, once again, a focus this offseason.
Couldn't agree more.
Can I jump in here, Scott? I want to get your thoughts, Ben, on the managerial decision to leave George Springer in the game, because his health and the longevity of having him through the postseason seem to be a priority. Obviously, this is a moot point anyways because of how things went. But when we were watching that game, the Blue Jays were up 4-1, and I felt like this is the time where we need to preserve George. Like, we've got a lead. Let's get the lockdown defense out there. We just watched him bang into the outfield wall, making a nice catch. He was grimacing as he comes off the field. I thought, all right, we need to get, like, preserve George for the next game. Blue Jays put up, like, 4 more runs in the bottom of the inning. We're up 8-1, and George Springer goes back into the field. We see the collision in an alternate universe situation where the Jays win that game, but there's still the collision with Bo, and let's say George Springer is gone for the rest of the playoffs. How much of a decision do you think we're second-guessing there?
I mean, six inning is pretty early to start bringing in your defensive outfield, right? Like in that regard, the Blue Jays never took anything for granted in that baseball game, despite being up 8-1. They knew the potential of the Mariners offense, which isn't a great offense, but we know they can get on base and they can hit the occasional home run. And as luck would have it, due up first in the ninth inning, or I guess it was the bottom of the eighth after the Mariners had tied it up, was George Springer's spot. So it ends up being Jackie Bradley Jr. So clearly after that at bat, if George Springer had gotten on base and it was a tie baseball game, they would have lifted him for Jackie Bradley Jr. as a pinch runner, and he would have taken over defensively. Even if the Jays are up the three or four runs in the bottom of the ninth, I think that's after that at bat, George Springer would have been lifted. Any earlier than that it really feels like you're playing the results, because I mean that's so early in a baseball game. And the Blue Jays, again, like you're taking things for granted. You're telling the Mariners that we've scored enough. We don't need to score again, and this game is over. And I just I don't see at that point in the baseball game making a defensive report.
Adam was actually texting me in the sixth inning they should be taking George out. Yeah. But I agree with you. I disagreed with Adam at the time. So
I understand the message that sends the Mariners, that, you know, we've scored enough runs, we're good. But I also just wonder, what kind of message does that send your own bullpen when you're saying a 7-run lead isn't enough for Tim Mayza and Anthony Bass to hold it down? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, George Springer, if truly there was a question about his health at that time, and there should have been obviously a little bit of a question, the guy and finally it ends up, you know, suffering the injury that removes him from the game in dramatic fashion in the eighth inning. But like, yeah, if it was a situation where you didn't think George Springer could go, or that like he was in jeopardy of injuring himself even more, which is hard to imagine, but it did happen. Sure, I just like, yeah. Go through the game logs of the season, and the Blue Jays have done some defensive repositioning late in games. And generally, it's not even George Springer being lifted from the game, right? Like, it's Jackie Bradley Jr. going into center field and George Springer moving to right field and Teoscar Hernandez leaving the game. So, like, in this, you know, playing it according to Hoyle, the way the Blue Jays have played it all season long, George Springer's still in the game probably as the right fielder, and it's Teoscar Hernandez that's leaving, and Jackie Bradley Jr. is playing center field and Tapia's in left.
Have you heard any word on George Springer and nothing? Yeah.
Well, so we had Ross Stripling on the show today, and it kind of mentioned it and gave him an opportunity to weigh in on what it was like to see that. And he didn't reference George. And I think George giving the thumbs up and trying to get the crowd into it at the end of the game was an indication that it's not too serious. Although John Schneider talked about multiple different injuries, which, and maybe that's just referring to the wrist and the elbow, and everything. Yeah. So I don't know, but yeah, I assume like if it was something serious, we'd have heard by now. I'm sure it's going to be a question asked of Ross Atkins at his season ending media availability tomorrow.
I know you already brought it up. Roster construction on this team has been, well, I mean, it's been a point of contention for what feels like 2 years. It's a very right-handed, heavy batting order. There's not a lot of lefties even in the pen. Teoscar Hernandez had himself a heck of a final 3 weeks of the season. I mean, he was the guy in that game too. I mean, my goodness, he was taking curtain calls in the fourth. I don't know how you feel about that or not, but nonetheless, I mean, he showed up big. I don't know how much his value is on the open market, but if you were to guess, do you think Teoscar Hernandez is a Toronto Blue Jay come the start of 2023? Or do you think there's a shakeup happening?
I mean, if I had to wager, I would say that he is, but I think for sure that the Blue Jays are listening on him and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who's under team control for two more years. He's under contract for, less than $6 million next year, and then arbitration eligible after that. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jays do something with their corner outfielders. I mean, Teoscar Hernandez, if you want to talk about somebody at the peak of their value, I mean, this is pretty close to it. I guess at the end of last year would have been the absolute tippy top, but you're right. The way he finished the year and then the way he finished the postseason, hard to pin any of Saturday on him with a couple of home runs. and almost single-handedly giving the Blue Jays enough offense to win that game. How do you replace his offense, though? Because, yes, he's right-handed, and he doesn't walk a ton, but he's the best Blue Jays hitter at hitting velocity, and he's a middle-of-the-order power bat, and I know he's not left-handed again, but this team is still going to be built on offense next season, no matter what is coming in the offseason. And I don't, that's what Teoscar brings, warts and all, is hard to find.
Do you think that Matt Chapman might get into some talks about an extension? Just looking at the minor league system where the Jays and who's coming up, and just especially with moving Jordan Groshans and how well he has kind of shored up that left side of the infield. Is this something the front office could be taking a good hard look at?
Maybe. It's yet to be seen what the future is for Gabriel Moreno, who I think obviously is going to be a factor in the major leagues. I don't think there's any rush to move any of the catchers because, you know, and so happened this year, one of them is going to get hurt. It's a position with great attrition, and you can't play 130 times behind the plate. And he's shown, at least in the final regular season game, that he's capable of moving around the diamond. This is a guy that was playing third base at the end of last year's minor league season when the Blue Jays looked like they might make the playoffs, and he could be a factor at that point if he can play a little second base, and definitely a corner outfield spot. Like we're talking about Teoscar Hernandez replacement or a Lourdes Gurriel Jr. replacement could be him. I mean, Matt Chapman's open to signing something that's, doesn't kill you as far as your payroll is concerned when you got a couple of pretty integral pieces that, well, are at least one of them's pining openly for an extension. I got all the time in the world for Matt Chapman. He's been pretty much everything that you expected he would be when you traded for him out of the Oakland A's. I'd be fine with that. And I'm sure the Blue Jays are going to start conversations with him about an extension. But I mean, I think if you're Matt Chapman, you think you're in line for a massive payday because you're going to improve on this year's numbers. His numbers, I mean, remember the first month plus of the season was not typical Matt Chapman.
Non-existent. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the defense also plays. So, sure, would they be open to an extension? I'm sure at the right price. But I don't know if I see that as priority number one this offseason.
I mean, there are a lot of decisions to be made for this front office. And, I mean, managerial-wise is probably number one. John Schneider's coming back, right? If you were to bet. I know you don't have a crystal ball here, Ben, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd be shocked, honestly, at this point, if John Schneider's not back, despite the nightmare kind of unfolding in front. I mean, and then also looks at, across the way, Rob Thompson, the Phillies manager, wins a wild card series and then is handed immediately a 2-year extension.
A 2-year deal, yeah.
Yeah, and the interim tag stripped from him. But I thought, did I agree with all the decisions John Schneider made in game 2? Like, obviously not. I've been over that a little bit, but I thought the way he explained them and the accountability expressed post game was refreshing and good. And obviously this team responded to him and seemed like a different team under him than Charlie Montoyo. And you heard player after player after player go to the wall and defending him and talking about how he had a sense of the room and team kind of gelled under him. And I mean, there's another factor that if you are Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro and you go about now firing two managers, and I understand, John Schneider probably, I mean, the way Ross Atkins was talking about him a couple of weeks ago called him a long-term fit, but that I assume that meant if he's not the manager, it's back to bench coach and still within the organization. But that's, I think most people would view that as couple of managers going through in a brief period of time, you do start to focus the microscope on yourself a little bit more. Oh, so for a multitude of different reasons, I think John Schneider's back next season.
You touched on Rob Thompson getting the the 2-year deal with the Phillies. Canadian boy. Having a Canadian at the helm of a major league team, that's a pretty big deal for Baseball Canada, right?
I think so. Yeah. Why not? It can't hurt. Yeah, Canadians in Major League Baseball, it's a great thing. I mean, we've seen so many successful ones over the years, and yeah, well, we've got some still in action in postseason play, and Josh Naylor out in Cleveland, and yeah, sure, yeah. Why not?
All right, I want to talk Alex Anthopoulos really quickly. He's such an enigma. I can't think of a general manager in sport, forget about baseball, that a fan base has literally heralded as a hero, quite like he endeared himself to Toronto Blue Jays fans in 2015. Like, fans don't cheer on general managers. Let's be serious. And he walked away at a beautiful time, you know, like managed to get behind the helm of the Atlanta Braves at a great time, inherited a young upcoming team. He's made them better. He's locked in the core. Do you think that there's anything that this Shapiro Atkins group can do to ever endear themselves like that, even winning? Or has it gone on to the point where it's just like Anthopoulos will always be the golden child because he got out at the right time?
Yeah, I think they win a World Series. They'll supersede
yeah,
him.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's amazing how the narrative shifted in such a short period of time, right? I mean, they did lead this team to a postseason berth and an ALCS berth in 2016. But of course, yeah, so much of the work had already been done by Alex Anthopoulos. That was not a team that had the Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins stamp on it. And then spent a couple of years in the wilderness. Like, this team, in a bizarro 2020 year, made the playoffs after, what, 2-3 years totally in the wilderness and not being able to do the rebuild that they probably wanted to do immediately after 2015. And I know it's hard to be super optimistic as a Blue Jays fan after what happened on Saturday, but I mean, look at this core and how young they are and how perilously few key pieces of this team are likely to depart this off season. We'll see, I guess, in the next couple of years, whether they take advantage of this window of contention. But there's no debate that a window of contention has been created in like a relatively short amount of time. And I think even
but
the,
Ben,
the
what
ardent...
about the saying? What about the saying? Dynasties are built in a day.
Yes, I think it's not that, but yeah, that's the cure all for all of this. How do you forget blowing a 7-run lead? How do you endear yourself to a fan base more than the previous guy who had a little bit of success, but once? And remember, going into 2015, Alex Anthopoulos was likely to be fired if he wasn't able to turn that team into a playoff contender. And then, yeah, obviously in an act of desperation that ended up working out and nobody really has come back to haunt you, traded a lot of future pieces for now pieces. And good thing he did, because yeah, it reawakened.
It really did.
A dormant fan base in the city that had been asleep for about 20 years. But no, if this team wins, yeah, it'll be...
All's forgiven.
100%.
We lost in devastating fashion, but had we won the series, we almost certainly weren't getting past the Astros. This team is not as close as we would like to be. The young core is great, but there are still additions that need to come, right? Like, what kind of urgency should this front office feel this offseason? Or do you think it is just more of a couple tweaks here and there kind of an offseason?
Well, yeah, they should feel a lot of urgency because we've seen, you know, in the building across the street that the Toronto Maple Leafs thought this window of contention would last forever and the winning would never cease, and it hasn't yet really started. So you may think you have forever to take multiple kicks at the can, and that doesn't necessarily work out. But I disagree with the premise that they like you know, okay, that they had no chance to win the World Series, or that they were going to get pounded into sand by the Houston Astros. I mean, the Seattle Mariners could easily win that series. That's the nature of playoff baseball, right? And I think one of the secondary lessons out of this wild card round and the two game series loss to the Mariners is that you'd like to avoid it if at all possible, that you should really
win the division. Yes.
Yeah. You should think, I mean, that's because clearly the incentive to be the top wild card when three of the four home teams in the wild card round lose, I guess it's hard to really convince yourself that that's as important as maybe we convinced ourselves by the end of the regular season going into next year. What is important, and there's just no debate, that giving yourself, hey, listen, the playoffs are always going to be a small sample and not representative of the large sample that 162 games is, but five is a little bit more representative than three. And if you can assure yourselves of a DS appearance, you need to do that. And this team, the way it played the last month and a half, 2 months, was worthy of competing atop the division. The Yankees got off to an insane lead, and the Blue Jays didn't really start playing their game until, yeah, with a couple of months into, you know, middle of August, and then September, and then the first few days of October. Now, that you need to think about winning the division next season to avoid all this wild card nonsense.
Do you think this team is close, though, with John Schneider at the helm, without the Yankees hopefully getting off to a historic pace? Do you think this team, as it stands today, is a couple minor tweaks away from winning the division next year?
They won 92 games. Yeah. they finished with like one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball. Just about every metric there. Yeah. I mean, they have one of the best 1-2 punches any rotation in baseball is going to have now. And they had one of the best closers in Major League Baseball. Beyond him, okay, yeah, you can quibble with the bullpen, obviously. Yeah, am I going to tell you that they're, you know, roster for roster better than the Astros? Probably not. Astros are the best record in the American League. It also should be said that they got to play the Oakland A's 19 times. They got to play the Angels 19 mm-hmm. times. Like, there's... And what's happening next year is a balanced
schedule, baby.
Well, yeah, closer to balance, not fully balanced. You still play your division more than the other teams in your league, but you also do play all 30 teams at least one series. Yeah, it's not like other sports, I should say, where, you know, you can. It's clear that, I don't know, if the Giants make the playoffs in the NFC, that team's not going to win a Super Bowl this year. If you're good enough to make the playoffs, any team can win in the postseason. We saw an Atlanta Braves team that was not nearly as good as this one this year mm-hmm. make some additions at the deadline for guys that were just guys in the outfield who certainly weren't Ronald Acuna Jr., beat the 110-win Dodgers mm-hmm. and win the World Series. Is this team good enough to win the World Series? Of course. Yeah, just get into the postseason. But yeah, you got to give yourself the best chance once you get there to win. And I think you look historically at the teams that do well this time of year. It's teams that have great offenses, which the Blue Jays do. A great top end of the rotation and swing and miss stuff out of the back end of the bullpen. Blue Jays have a lot of that. They don't have the last thing in an abundance like some of these other teams do.
So you kind of touched on this, Ben. Jays are incredibly deep at catcher, and there's kind of two trains of thoughts when it comes to this catching situation. I'm just kind of curious where you land. There's the idea that you move Jansen, Kirk, or Moreno in the offseason for pitching or whatever your need may be that you're moving them for. The other thought is you don't move any of them, and you maybe start to move Moreno around a little bit more to get at bats for him. If you, Ben Ennis, are the GM, what direction do you go?
Yeah, I don't think the impetus is to move any of them. I mean, that's the toughest position to find offense from. Mm-hmm. You were the best hitting team out of the catching position all season long, and you had one of the better DH seasons as well. And that's with Danny Jansen only finding a couple of single-digit starts at DH. It was primarily Alejandro Kirk, and then, yeah, you would rotate mm-hmm. Teoscar Hernandez occasionally. But, yeah, I think if you've got somebody who's capable of playing that position defensively, and can hit, that means that they're capable of playing a lot of places defensively. I mean, there's a reason why so many prospects start up the middle, right? You try and get your prospect to play center field, shortstop, or catcher. And once they can't hack it, then you move them off those positions. I mean, Carlos Delgado was a catcher, right? Like a lot of these guys start off as catchers and move other places. But Gabriel Moreno appears to be a pretty good defender at that position, which is it's a bonus. And the idea of
cannon being, of an arm.
Yeah. I mean, we think of utility players or those Ben Zobrist types as being infielders and outfielders, but what if Gabriel Moreno is a utility player that also catches once a week for you and then plays in the infield and some corner outfield? I mean, that's sounds pretty good to me. I wouldn't mess with what the Blue Jays have behind the plate right now.
It was pretty cool that last game of the season there with the doubleheader, watching him, you know, start at catcher and then get moved to second base and third base and play some left field. And yeah, it was great. I'm all for that. I absolutely love that. Thank you so much, Ben. We've had a blast talking baseball with you. Would love to do this again sometime. Do you have a few minutes for us to kind of go through the chat here and maybe get a few listener questions for you?
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
Put you on the spot there. We'll make it quick.
First one comes in from Raul, says Jays need to get Hunter Green from the Reds. I need to make a big push for Edwin Diaz and right-handed pitching. Use Nate Pearson as the reliever and Ricky Tiedemann. What are your thoughts on that?
To what? Use Pearson as trade bait? I suppose. Hunter Green definitely throws hard. That seems good. That's the type of guy that you'd be looking to add. The idea that Nate Pearson has much value at all, hard to imagine at this point. And it's not to say that he's not going to have an even great career. Like, that's still possible. We've seen this sport. I mean, it's one where, you know, 27-year-olds sometimes reach the majors for the first time and start close to Hall of Fame careers. I mean, we saw Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, even Josh Donaldson was a late bloomer. I mean, those are hitters and not pitchers. But we even saw, you know, Chris Carpenter when he was a starting pitcher for the Blue Jays, and so many people ready to give up on him because he was oft injured and never really produced to the level that they thought he would. And he ends up in St. Louis as kind of a Cardinal legend. So, yeah, I'm not writing off Nate Pearson, but the idea that somebody would be banking on him or that he would be the centerpiece of some massive deal. And Ricky Tiedemann does have all that new fandangled top prospect glow about him. And I think he's more likely to be a factor in the Blue Jays rotation next year than he is trade bait this offseason.
Okay. Next one, not really a question, but Jason says Ben's bobblehead collection is intimidating the hell out of me. Nice bobblehead collection you got there.
It Ben. Should. That's good. That was the object of the bobblehead collection was intimidation. I'm doing pretty well. I just moved, so I'm trying to decide if this is the exact setup that I want, but I'm all right. I'm hanging in there with my bobblehead collection, I would say.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Last one then here comes from, and thanks again so much for all your time tonight. I know it's a late night for you. Lover LOL says, "Hey fellas, big fan. My question is, do you think Springer could have caught that ball if he fully dived? And how wrong is Bo for getting in the way?"
This is another one where I have a tough time issuing blame. Turns out it was nobody's ball, right? Like it is, there's a reason why nobody called anybody else off is because nobody had it, right? It was going to be a max all out effort by somebody. Obviously, all things being equal, that's the center fielder's ball, but I'm not 100% convinced that George Springer gets to it. What I am convinced of is if Bo Bichette doesn't dive, that it's at worst a two-run single probably, and the Blue Jays still have the lead. But yeah, Bo Bichette thought he was going to make an incredible play to save the inning and send the Blue Jays into the bottom half with a 3-run lead, and instead it ends up in disaster. To me, that's not really anybody's fault. It's just Yeah,
tough to bat out the effort, right?
I loved seeing. I mean, I hated seeing it, but I love having your guys going hard like that. Like that's what you want out of your big guys, right? You don't want them playing it safe all the time. I don't know.
Yeah, and that just goes into the bucket of bad luck.
Yeah, in my terrible, terrible luck.
The laundry list of reasons that went down. Ben, thank you so much for all your time. All the best. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we can have you back sometime. Take care, man.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for this.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday. Thanks for listening.